The public may never know the full story of how the intelligence community pinpointed the location of Osama bin Laden, but this much is known. An investigation like this involved the synthesis of many data points gathered from many sources and media. Tom Tallur is a forensic futurologist and a longtime forensic investigator. He's the former head of NASA's Computer Crimes Division, and he joins us now to answer questions on how the hunt for bin Laden likely came down. Mr. Tallur, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Tom. How are you this morning?
Okay, so what are all of the sources of information you think are likely to have played a role in finding bin Laden?
Well, I think there's a great deal. There's very, very many. The full force of our overseas law enforcement intelligence gathering capabilities through our LEGATs and our FBI capabilities overseas and other agencies, our intelligence agencies, the technical capabilities of our intelligence community, just so many in a wide range of sources. And a lot of the public doesn't realize that we've been hunting for people like this and these terrorist groups since the 1980s. This is not a new thing. It just got a new profile with 9-1-1 and bin Laden being the prime target. But in the case of bin Laden himself, this has been just a full court press since 9-1-1. So many, many different sources of intelligence information went into this effort.
It's also evolved because technology has evolved, too, and they have those new tools. How do you correlate the human work with the technological data?
Well, it takes a lot of people and a lot of effort, and it all gets synthesized by the intelligence agencies here in Washington. And so it's just a big effort. It would take a long time to explain all the different tools that go into it, a lot of different techniques that involve, but it just takes a lot of people and a lot of tools, a lot of effort to do it all, to synthesize it all, but all source reporting is what it comes down to.
But someone has to be in charge of it ultimately. So what does that person do? How do they weigh and evaluate all of the different inputs coming into an investigation?
Well, the government has a lot of interagency working groups and a lot of interagency coordination committees. I sat on many of them when I was in the government. And these folks share information real time and in weekly and monthly meetings with each other, and that's how a lot of this work gets done. It isn't all done by one agency, and it doesn't all come from the top down. It goes across and throughout the government. And so that's how this kind of work gets done. And so, for example, with all the materials that were seized from the bin Laden compound, that's going to be reviewed by lots of different people across the government. And it's that kind of perspective that's going to help figure out what all that material is and what they ought to do with it.
But information sharing in and of itself has actually been kind of a problem, and it's only been since 9/11 that those walls have been torn down. We've been hearing about, you know, stovepiping for years.
They say it's been torn down. In my 31 years of the government, I didn't see it. It's a constant challenge to undo massive bureaucracy that's been built up over generations. And so it's done on an individual basis with contacts, and it's done on the agency it's done at multiple levels within the agencies and the government in order to get this kind of stuff done. Yeah, there might be one agency in charge of coordinating it. It could be CIA in this case, probably is. But you can be sure that for the domestic counterintelligence point of view, the FBI is going to be in charge of that. You can be sure that the military is going to be in charge of certain functions. I think what's really interesting about all this is that you've got an asymmetry of forces going on here. So you've got a mighty, massive military footprint, intelligence footprint that we project on around the world that's been going on for decades. But the media has been the one that's created the demarcation points for the public, and the government knows this. So releasing this information of value, just letting people know what's out there in terms of what they think the government has seized, is kind of selective, and in a way it's to our advantage, because that way we can do with that information what we want.
Tom Tallur is former head of NASA's Computer Crimes Division. He is now a forensic futurologist and consultant. And within a given agency, when you have a lead that might be promising, you have to deploy resources, money and people and so forth to follow that lead. How can you be sure that what has filtered up to you as the options are accurate and it's worth the deployment of resources, because nobody has enough money and people to chase every lead?
That's a great question, Tom. It's just something that when you're managing government resources, you ferret out very carefully. I know when I was in this position, I would call around to the different agencies involved and check on who's doing what and make sure that we were all plugged in we all kind of know who each other is in this business, in key pockets in the government, in each agency, and we coordinate with each other to make sure that we don't go tripping over each other, or we don't have any what we call equity disruptions. We don't want to disrupt something another agency is doing in another country by just running off and doing something on our own. So in that sense, this personal, hands-on, interagency coordination is what really makes this all work. It's knowing who your counterparts are, and it's knowing what they're doing, and knowing your own mission and what you shouldn't do and shouldn't be doing, and coordinating it all, and agreeing to not do certain things so that others can take the lead on it.
It sounds almost like that would just be the voice of experience, that you're going to learn that as you go. It's not something that you are going to be able to get out of a book.
It is the voice of experience, and it's the voice of experience. What's really interesting here, I think, with this bin Laden seizure is that for the United States, with the high media profile on this, it puts the United States in a tremendous strategic position. They can afford to leak certain information that they have all this information, but they can do with it what they will. The forensics on this will be amazing, assuming that they have everything that's being projected they have, which I have no doubt they do. I think bin Laden was an egotist. They'll know his tradecraft of communicating with al-Qaeda, and with that they'll be able to do all kinds of things. They can plant false and deceptive last bin Laden messages anywhere they want to. They can mislead people. Those bin Laden operatives that think they could have, that think they can hide, now are going to have to go on the run. If they go on the run, they're subject to being caught. If they stay where they are, they're subject to being caught. I mean, it puts the United States in a tremendous position publicly to do what they want to do with this information. And each agency is going to have its own interest in this information because of its own equities and what it's trying to do with the public monies that's being spent to protect the government and the country. So it's now, pretty interesting.
Now, a moment ago you said bin Laden was an egotist, and which leads me to my question. In human intelligence, you try to ascertain the habits and the personality of the quarry. Are there clues to those aspects of a person, clues to be found in the forensic trail
Absolutely.
They lead in the digital part?
Absolutely. You can look at somebody's computer and get some, you can get a great insight as to, and any digital device they handle, and you can get some great insight into how they think and what they do and where they've been, and you can nail it right down to the minute, the date, the time, and the second when they were doing something. And while some of it can be misleading if taken out of context, in general, you can tell an awful lot about a person with their digital devices. So let's take the bin Laden story and let's put it with a parallel story about the way things operated in the spy world in the old days and still to this day. It used to be foreign intelligence officers had a particular tradecraft with the way they would communicate. I remember the Russians had a particular tradecraft with the way they would communicate with the Moscow Center when they were doing their work. Well, bin Laden has devised a tradecraft for communicating with his dispersed cells geographically. And this tradecraft can be dissected, and the United States can understand it, and they can mimic it, and they can create deception trails and disruptions and detection methods. And they can use advanced technology like smart dust and other things to track al-Qaeda and its operatives all across the world now. So with this information, they have an insight. They have sort of a panoramic digital blueprint to go look at and figure out any number of strategies they'd like to execute that they could take on not only a means to go get bad guys now, but to set them up for fall in the future, throughout the future, as they execute their activities, well, essentially penetrate them in the future forever.
It's our understanding also that bin Laden didn't really use digital devices. He didn't really use any of that stuff. He used couriers, and that's where the human intelligence comes in, obviously, but does it make it harder, or do we just have to think smarter?
Well, what it means is he used couriers as a cutout to keep the electronic fingerprint off of him from a transmission point of view where he was, but it doesn't mean he didn't use digital devices. It meant he could have been creating directions and thumb drives, giving the thumb drives to the couriers, and the couriers take the thumb drives into Afghanistan or wherever they're going to go, and then they transmit electronically the instructions to other cells throughout the world. So just because it didn't come from his compound doesn't mean he wasn't engaging in digital communications. It just means he didn't do it from there.
It just means he had a wall of human something in between him and the actual digital itself.
And right. And it means that what was transmitted digitally would have his digital fingerprints all over it in terms of traffic analysis. So if you do traffic analysis on those transmissions, you may see a bin Laden-like footprint on it.